Summer isn't over yet. Do you need any other reason to be able to stay indoors? Well, I have a new Netflix list of what their upcoming offerings are from Entertainment Weekly. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury for Sun Sounds of Arizona, and I'm reading from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is EW.com. First, I'm going to get started with the must list. Spider-Man, Brand New Day, a new Greg Araki film, and an adult's prequel episode top this week's must list. This is by Tiffany Kelly. Beginning, Middle, End, and Kat Cohen Broad Strokes round out our picks for the weekend. Phew! The EW team survived San Diego Comic-Con! More than 300 stars came through our studio atop the Hard Rock Hotel, and we had the pleasure of grabbing drinks with some of them on our studio's penthouse patio during our Sunset Social, which we hosted Friday night in partnership with Soho House. It was an incredible weekend, but now I need a coffee and a nap simultaneously. That was Patrick Gomez, editor-in-chief. Spider-Man, Brand New Day, is first on the list. When we last saw Peter Parker, played by Tom Holland, he was at his lowest point. He'd just lost his aunt, and everyone he'd ever loved had forgotten about him, including his beloved MJ, played by Zendaya. Now, a new day dawns with the arrival of Holland's fourth solo outing as Spider-Man, and it's a big one. Not only is his DNA mutating, but he's also facing off against a mysterious new threat that can jump into people's bodies. And he's still lonely. Destin Daniel Cretton from Shanghai directs what could be Spider-Man's most emotional movie yet, packed with thrilling visual nods to the comics and strong supporting turns from other familiar Marvel faces. Yes, Sadie Sink's character lives up to the hype. I Want Your Sex is next. Starring Olivia Wilde and Cooper Hoffman, this is Greg Araki's brash, crass, and bracingly direct return to the big screen. And if you have the temerity to tunnel below its provocations, you'll enter into a rich debate playing out over sex, storytelling, and commodification. Adults is number three on the list. It's a Paul Baker origin story. A new prequel installment of the FX comedy series, streaming on Hulu, shows us how the tight-knit friend group first met Jack Innanen's character. Think of the special episode, Marathon Day, as an appetizer before season two drops in late August. Beginning, Middle, End is next. It's a book, part road novel, part memory puzzle, part existential plea. Valeria Luiselli's, we also know her from The Story of My Teeth, her new book enters the piercingly insightful Mexican-American novelist into the running for the most accomplished writer working today. And Kat Cohen is number five. Broad Strokes. Cabaret comedian Kat Cohen strikes again with this new one-woman musical at New York City's Lucille Lortel Theater, in which she recounts having a stroke at just 30 years old, while also explaining that she has always been young for her grade. That's our must list, Spider-Man Brand New Day, a new Greg Araki film, and an adult's prequel episode topping this week's must list. It's by Tiffany Kelly. As a side article to the Spider-Man entry on the must list, I have Spider-Man team calls Brand New Day the start of something new. It's a beginning. This is by Nick Romano. According to the cast and producers, we should be taking the title Spider-Man Brand New Day at face value. The film, in theaters, marks a brand new day for the web-slinger of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Tom Holland recently acknowledged this moment in his career around the Odyssey as the last time he can play a teenager on screen. And now, after three Spider-Man movies directed by John Watts, Marvel and Sony now present an older Peter Parker from filmmaker Destin Daniel Cretton, who we know from Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. Holland and fellow star Zendaya, who plays MJ, and Jacob Batalon, who plays Ned, see the film as both the closing of a chapter and the start of a new one. "It is a brand new day, after all," Batalon quips during a group interview with Entertainment Weekly. "Whether or not the day has started is the question," Zendaya adds. "I think the truth is that this is the beginning of a new thing," Holland says. "Spider-Man, brand new thing." Spider-Man Brand New Day sees Peter attempting to rebuild his life after the events of the previous film wiped all memory of his existence from the world. Although, even after reestablishing himself as Spider-Man for the people of New York City, he feels isolated and alone, exacerbated by watching MJ and Ned live their post-college lives in the city without him. It's here when a new adversary emerges, someone who can physically jump into an individual's mind and puppeteer them. While she can't talk about who this villain is, Spider-Man franchise producer Amy Pascal notes how the film is about not wanting to be who you are. "It's about wanting to be anybody else but who you are," she continues, "and it's about the desire to fit in and to not be different and to learn to understand that being different is okay and maybe great." Pascal confirms, "We definitely don't see Spider-Man Brand New Day as a closing. It's a beginning." Under Cretton's direction, the film marks a tonal shift for these Spider-Man movies. Zendaya posits it's probably the most intimate look at Peter Parker that we've ever seen, because Cretton was most interested in the Peter Parker part of Spider-Man. She continues, "I also think we've never seen Peter this vulnerable. Do you know what I mean? I think he's been put in very difficult positions many times before, but he's never been completely isolated and completely alone. I think that changes the entire dynamic of the film." Destin came in with such a beautiful visual language also for how he wanted to tell the story and making it feel more mature without losing the essence and the fun that we all know from previous movies that John created. It does appear, at least for now, that Holland plans to stick around as Spider-Man for a bit longer. The film arrives just 2 weeks after The Odyssey hit theaters, and the actor called that film, "The last time in my career I get the chance to play a boy," he told IGN. "It felt like a perfect bookend to the first chapter of my career." Then, for a Good Morning America appearance, he reflected on past comments about his future as Peter Parker. "If I'm playing Spider-Man after I'm 30, I've done something wrong," he told GQ in 2021. "I think that's probably the statement of a naive young kid who, at the time, the idea of turning 30 felt like a lifetime away," Holland said. "I've never taken this character for granted, and I think there's a large part of that statement that was, I have this real hunger and desire to shepherd whoever is lucky enough to play this character next through that process. Robert Downey did that for me, on set and off set. I don't want to hold on to this character. I don't want to overstay my welcome." There may be someone in Holland's future to mentor. Marvel Studios head Kevin Feige told Miles Morales, the Brooklyn-based wall crawler, could be coming to the MCU after the animated Spider-Verse movies wrap up. "You can't think about the future of Spider-Man and not think about Miles, for sure," he said. "Mainly, I'm thinking about enjoying Beyond the Spider-Verse and Amy's next movie. After that, it'll be very interesting to see where Spider-Man should go." That was Spider-Man Team Calls Brand New Day the start of something new. It's a beginning. And it was by Nick Romano. This story was the top story on Entertainment Weekly, EW.com, when I pulled up the website. Yahya Abdul-Mateen II reacts to shocking Wonder Man cancellation. See you at the Emmys. This is by Derek Lawrence. We no longer have to wonder what Yahya Abdul-Mateen II thinks about the surprising Wonder Man cancellation. On Thursday, Marvel axed the superhero comedy series, despite previously renewing it for a second season. Abdul-Mateen has since weighed in on social media, posting a selfie of himself in a Wonder Man hat. Word just dropped that Wonder Man won't be coming back for season two. And if you don't know, now you know. Smiley face emoji, he wrote. That's life, right? Everything will shake out. I wanted to say thank you to everybody who watched the show, enjoyed the show, and shared that they enjoyed the show in some way or another. Released earlier this year and co-created by Spider-Man Brand New Day filmmaker Destin Daniel Cretton, Wonder Man received overwhelmingly positive critical and audience reviews to the point that Abdul-Mateen will be up for Outstanding Lead Actor in a Comedy Series at September's Emmys. The show worked, and that's my favorite thing about it, he continued. I can see in the messages I get saying how the show reminded some of you not to give up. And I feel it in the genuine love shared when I bump into some of you all during the day. So, thinking of you all today, I'm glad we got to be a part of something cool. He concluded, thank you for watching, and see you at the Emmys. On the Disney Plus series, Abdul-Mateen starred as Simon Williams, a struggling actor who thinks he might have found the perfect role when a legendary director starts casting for a Wonder Man movie reboot. MCU veteran Ben Kingsley returned as Trevor Slattery, and the duo quickly formed a bond, which was jeopardized when Simon learned of Trevor's real motivations. In a January interview for what is now the series finale, Cretton told Entertainment Weekly, we already have been just brainstorming, imagining where they could go next, but we can't really tease anything at this point. Of course we want a second season, Kingsley added at the time, a wish that was initially granted in March. It would be dishonest to say, ooh, I don't know, let's wait. Of course we do. I'll say it to the world. While we wait to see if Abdul-Mateen reprises his character elsewhere in the MCU, he's set for a starring appearance later this year in David Fincher's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood sequel, The Adventures of Cliff Booth. That was Yahya Abdul-Mateen II reacts to shocking Wonder Man cancellation, and it was by Derek Lawrence. This is exclusive to Entertainment Weekly. Mahershala Ali talks moving on after failed Blade movie. I really learned the hard way. The two-time Oscar winner tells Entertainment Weekly he doesn't want to do movies that just feel like reissues of things. This is by Mika Shana Pierre and Mike Miller. Mahershala Ali has officially moved on from his hopes of bringing Marvel's beloved vampire hunter Blade to the big screen, but he's grateful for the lessons he's learned along the way. The two-time Oscar winner, 52, was revealed as the successor to Wesley Snipes, who previously played the Marvel Comics character in three films from 1998 to 2004, when the reboot was originally announced in 2019. But in the 7 years since the announcement, the project has been through a series of writers and directors and was ultimately scrapped after being pulled from Marvel's release calendar in 2024. We all know it's no secret that Blade didn't quite work out, but clearly, if Blade had happened, this wouldn't have happened, Ali tells Entertainment Weekly in reference to his upcoming Amazon MGM film, Your Mother, Your Mother, Your Mother, from director Bassam Tariq, who was also slated to direct him in Blade. When Blade was announced in 2019, it didn't have a release date or director attached. Tariq was later hired to direct the film, with Watchmen's Stacey Ose-Kufour writing the screenplay. At San Diego Comic-Con in 2022, Marvel set a release date of November 3, 2023. Shortly thereafter, Tariq exited the project in September 2022 due to what Marvel described as continued shifts in our production schedule. Now, Tariq and Ali have put Blade in their rear view and are focusing on their upcoming original film, which follows the latter as a devoutly religious hitman who embarks on a desperate journey across Houston to protect his children after the death of his wife. During this journey, he must confront the forces closing in on him and the beliefs threatening to unravel him from within. I think as a result of the dust settling a bit and Bassam working on his next project and me looking for my next project, clearly Bassam thought of me, Ali says, of how he and Tariq reconnected. And when I got to read the script, the story came through. It was so refreshing to read something that was essentially a no-brainer for me for many reasons. From the quality of the writing and the story, but the character and all the specifics around that character and that story, I just felt, dare I say, I felt right for it, you know? After his experience with Blade, Ali says he wants to commit himself to making movies that are unique but purposeful and have a real reason for being here. I'm just working and trying to resonate and be in your homes and be a part of your lives in a different way, he continues. It's got to go back to stories that really matter, that feel like they have a real purpose for existing, that don't feel like just reissues of things. Like I really learned the hard way. Ali adds that his instinct is toward things that feel really unique and small with big potential. I think this film only affirmed that for me. The comments reflect a similar sentiment he expressed during an interview with GQ published Friday. When asked whether Marvel fans can expect him to step into the leathers of the vampire hunter, Ali answered with a firm, "Not with me." "I've been doing this professionally for pushing 30 years now," he added. "One thing I've learned is that what is for you is for you, and what is not is not. For whatever reason, that project is not for me. If they wanted to do it, we would have done it." Ali also noted that Marvel Studios had him under contract. They have billions of dollars. If they wanted to do the movie, we would have done the movie. So we're not doing the movie. Ali's comments come shortly after Marvel Studios president Kevin Feige admitted that the failed reboot is a personal disappointment. Even though it was very exciting to have Snipes reprise his role in 2024's Deadpool and Wolverine, "I'm feeling very excited that we got Wesley back for a time in Deadpool and Wolverine, and like a gigantic loser and failure that we didn't get off the ground with Mahershala," Feige admitted during a recent discussion on the Happy, Sad, Confused podcast. Meanwhile, at San Diego Comic-Con, Marvel Studios announced a Ghost Rider film starring Ryan Gosling and a third Black Panther film starring David Johnson as the new hero. Your Mother, Your Mother, Your Mother hits select theaters on September 25th before going wide on October 9th. That was Mahershala Ali talks moving on after failed Blade movie, "I Really Learned the Hard Way." It was an exclusive story from Entertainment Weekly. Cooper Hoffman says Olivia Wilde was much more comfortable with nudity in I Want Your Sex than he was. This is by Mike Miller, and we heard about I Want Your Sex because it was on the must list. Cooper Hoffman is still new to this whole sex scene business. The long walk and licorice pizza actor got thrown into the deep end in that regard on his latest fittingly titled project, I Want Your Sex, from indie director Greg Araki. He stars in the film out this weekend as Elliot, a timid, directionless young man who gets hired as an assistant to Erica Tracy, played by Olivia Wilde, a famous, controversial artist who turns him into her submissive sexual muse. The film sees Hoffman in various stages of undress, wearing all sorts of kink gear, and in several outrageous sex scenes. The relative Hollywood newcomer tells Entertainment Weekly it took a little while to get comfortable with the scenes, especially considering Wilde is one of his biggest childhood crushes from her days on the Fox show House. I was kind of obsessed with her, he admits. She was hilarious, Hoffman says of his co-star, her and Greg. You can tell that they're much more comfortable with the scenes that we were doing than I was, because I would immediately put a robe on and sit by myself on the corner of a couch, and they'd be like, let's go again. Like, what's going on? He adds with a laugh, they were trying to talk about what we're having for lunch. I'm like, guys, I need to get through the scene before we have any normal conversations. But it kind of worked for your character, adds Araki, sitting beside his star for the interview, because your character is incredibly timid, and Olivia's character was very sexually confident and used to it. Also, it was just a very respectful set to be on, Hoffman continues. The first day was really scary, but then I kind of started to enjoy it, is probably not the right word, but I started to feel comfy and confident in myself, which is a really exciting thing to feel as an actor. Due to the shooting schedule, the first day they filmed the sex scenes was also the first day of the entire production. We were shooting sex scenes day one out of the gate, Araki says. It's just the way the schedule worked. And then the second day was the three-way in the bedroom. He continues, I've been doing these sexy movies for a long, long time, so I'm very used to it and very comfortable with it. Olivia's doing a lot of sexy movies and sexy scenes, so she was very comfortable with it. Cooper was a little bit like, okay. When shooting intimate scenes, Araki says, it's really my job as the director to make the set as safe as possible and as comfortable as possible because actors are so vulnerable. They're putting themselves out there and they really are naked, emotionally and physically. To that end, the indie filmmaker worked with an intimacy coordinator on the project. Right before shooting, we had a little intimacy meeting, and that really broke the ice, he explains. If his experiences taught him anything, Araki says the most important thing is that the actors performing the scenes are comfortable with each other. Ultimately, that's why it was so important that Olivia and Cooper had such great chemistry, he says. If you're doing it with a partner that you're not really eye to eye with, I can see how it would be very awkward and very difficult. When I saw Olivia and Cooper together, I said, this is going to be it, because they really clicked and they really got each other. I Want Your Sex is now in theaters. That was Cooper Hoffman, says Olivia Wilde was much more comfortable with nudity in I Want Your Sex than he was, and it was by Mike Miller. Another article that's exclusive only to Entertainment Weekly, see Alexander Skarsgård's nipples made out of wicker in steamy first trailer for Wicker, that's the name of the movie. This is by Shelby Stivale. Alexander Skarsgård is living out a lifelong dream by playing a man made out of wicker. More on that in a second. Entertainment Weekly can exclusively reveal the first trailer for Alex Houston Fisher and Eleanor Wilson's upcoming film, Wicker. The comedic, heartfelt fable stars Olivia Colman as the fisherwoman who has long been teased by her fellow townspeople for being single and stinky. In an attempt at revenge, she recruits the local basket maker, played by Peter Dinklage, to weave her a perfect partner, her wicker husband, played by Skarsgård. Most male actors dream of playing Hamlet at some point in their career. I never did, Skarsgård tells Entertainment Weekly. My dream was always to have nipples made out of wicker. Thanks to our wonderful directors, Eleanor and Alex, and the brilliant artists at Wite in New Zealand, my dream has finally come true. The trailer opens with Colman having loud, passionate sex with her wicker husband, which poses some technical questions about the film's many sex scenes, especially considering Skarsgård's intricately woven costume and facial prosthetics were created practically. Wite Workshop, the special effects house behind the Lord of the Rings, designed and built the look. Despite the delicate nature of the costume and subject matter, Fisher and Wilson say the sex scenes were fun to choreograph. They credit Ita O'Brien, the godmother of intimacy coordinating, with helping the actors who shot the scenes during their first week on set feel comfortable. These scenes definitely required some of the most detailed prep of all the movie. They were very specific in the script, and every shot was boarded, rehearsed, and reboarded ahead of time, the directors tell Entertainment Weekly. Of course, the wicker suit added to the dynamic. As the trailer continues, it's apparent that the wicker husband makes quite the impression on the village women, especially the stuffy tailor's wife, played by Elizabeth Debicki, who starts to spiral over the fisherwoman's rather unconventional union. I loved the fisherwoman, Colman says. She's the only one not toeing the line. The Oscar winner calls Wicker one of the best and most original scripts I'd read in a long time, which is a testament to Fisher and Wilson's screenplay adapted from the short story The Wicker Husband by Ursula Wills Jones. Seeing Skarsgård in costume also heightened the movie's allure. Alex is funny, intelligent, and beautiful anyway. In the wicker costume, he's breathtaking, Colman gushes. Everything is exaggerated. He's a work of art. Alex fills the wicker husband with a beautiful soul. Both Fisher and Wilson agreed, admitting they had some anxiety about what the suit would look like before seeing him in it. Alex's performance, while incredibly nuanced and understated, was very technically and physically challenging, and it's really the marriage of the prosthetic and the performance that sells the whole thing, the directing duo notes. Once he was walking and talking as the wicker husband, we knew the spectacle, the romance, the whole heart of the movie was in safe hands. Wicker hits select theaters on October 23rd with a wider release on October 30th. That was C. Alexander Skarsgård's Nipples Made Out of Wicker in steamy first trailer for Wicker. It was exclusive to Entertainment Weekly, and that trailer is linked in the article so you can see everything that they've just described. The holiday director Nancy Myers teases a return to Christmas with new movie. This is by Derek Lawrence. Nancy Myers is headed back to the holidays. 20 years after the release of her Christmas classic, The Holiday, the iconic rom-com filmmaker posted a festive behind-the-scenes shot from her highly anticipated next movie. One day we're shooting at the beach, the next day we're doing Christmas in July, she wrote alongside a photo on Instagram. It's not surprising that the holiday season would factor into the untitled Warner Brothers film, given its current release date of December 25th, 2027. Set to star Penelope Cruz, Kieran Culkin, Owen Wilson, and Holiday alum Jude Law, the project is believed to be a version of Paris Paramount, which was scrapped at Netflix back in 2023. There's been a lot written about my new film, Myers wrote at the time on social media. Here's one thing I can easily clear up, and that's the title, Paris Paramount. It's from a quote by the brilliant and elegant comedy director, dare I say creator of the romantic comedy, Ernst Lubitsch. The movie is about a group of people making a film and the magic and mystery of what we do. As always, Lubitsch said it best. After finding success with The Father of the Bride films, which she produced and co-wrote and were directed by her former husband, the late Charles Shire, Myers made her feature directorial debut with 1998's The Parent Trap. She followed that hit up with What Women Want, Something's Complicated, and The Holiday. The 2006 rom-com followed two lovelorn women, played by Kate Winslet and Cameron Diaz, as they exchanged homes during the holiday season, leading to new romances. The Holiday grossed over $200 million and has become a Christmas rewatch staple. Last December, Myers shared some great behind-the-scenes photos from the production. "Thank you for tagging me in all of your posts about The Holiday," she said. "I love them all. Here's some photos you might enjoy. Wishing you a wonderful Christmas." A decade after her last film, 2016's The Intern, it's time to start preparing for another Myers Christmas come next year. That was The Holiday. Director Nancy Myers teases a return to Christmas with new movie, and it was by Derek Lawrence. I'm going to take a moment here before I get to the next story and remind everybody you are listening to Entertainment Weekly. This is Sun Sounds of Arizona, and I am reading from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is EW.com. Here are 11 can't-miss movies coming to Netflix in August 2026. This is what I was talking about at the top of the show. It's by Brianna Ziegler. Summer isn't over just yet, so in between those last-minute beach trips, be sure to throw on some new heaters from your Netflix queue. August brings with it some particularly excellent additions to the Netflix movie library. Alongside star-studded Netflix originals like The Whisper Man with Robert De Niro and Adam Scott, and The Last House featuring Greta Lee and Wagner Moura, the streamer will also host some older titles to check out if you missed them or are in need of a rewatch. The social media satire Ingrid Goes West and James Gray's powerful period drama Armageddon Time are a couple of particularly good options. We're going to read on as we highlight 11 must-see movies coming to Netflix in August. The first is The Kid Detective from 2020. That's available to stream August 1st. When Abe Applebaum, played by Adam Brody, was a child, he was a local celebrity for being the kid detective who solved minor crimes around his hometown. But as an adult, Abe's days of being a kid detective are all he has, having stagnated in both his life and his career as a local private detective. It's partly due to the disappearance of his friend Gracie Gulliver, a case he was unable to solve as a child and one that left him filled with guilt. But when a high school student named Caroline, played by Sophie Nalesi, comes to him with a new case, Abe sees it as a chance to finally redeem himself and move on. The Kid Detective was an excellent film that got lost in the chaos of movie releases during the COVID-19 pandemic, but it's more than worth your time. A pitch-black comedy about arrested development, regret, and lost potential. Still, the movie isn't without a funny bone, which attracted Brody to the material. "Even in the darkest of times, I'm drawn to this macabre sense of humor," he told Entertainment Weekly in 2020. Marie Antoinette from 2006 is next on the list. It's also available to stream August 1st. In fact, all of them will be unless I say otherwise. I don't want to put down period movies, but sometimes they have a formality that I don't really respond to. I tried to make something youthful and alive, director Sofia Coppola told Entertainment Weekly upon the release of 2006's Marie Antoinette. While some criticized the film for being ahistorical and valuing style over substance, those qualities are ultimately assets, not detriments. The movie is intentionally presented like a piece of bubblegum, and Coppola masterfully creates a superficial, dreamlike world that entrances viewers as much as it does our doomed anti-heroine, played by Kirsten Dunst. But it's all window dressing, slyly presenting another commentary on the unique isolation and exploitation of being a woman. Number 3 is Nightcrawler from 2014. Jake Gyllenhaal deeply unsettles as Lou Bloom, a craven, skeletal bottom dweller in Los Angeles who stumbles into a career as a freelance videographer of late-night crime. In his undaunted quest to get better and better footage to sell to a local news station, Lou goes to shocking lengths to obtain grisly material for a news director, played by Rene Russo, desperate to boost ratings. Nightcrawler is a blistering neo-noir thriller led by a deeply disturbing tour de force performance from Gyllenhaal. Entertainment Weekly's critic declared that Gyllenhaal delivered what could be his best and creepiest performance to date, and praised the film as a 21st century takedown of the media's pandering, if it bleeds, it leads, ethos, and the ghoulish nightcrawlers who live by it. Number 4 on the list is Something's Gotta Give from 2003. Wealthy music executive Harry Sanborn, played by Jack Nicholson, only dates women under 30 and is currently seeing 29-year-old auctioneer Marin, played by Amanda Peet. But when the couple heads to Marin's family beach house for a romantic weekend, they're interrupted by her mother, Erica, played by Diane Keaton, and her aunt, Zoe, played by Frances McDormand. Disgusted by his overt misogyny and penchant for younger women, Erica ends up having to care for Harry when he has a heart attack and is ordered to recuperate at the house. During that time, Harry begins to fall for the more age-appropriate Erica, who's far too good for him. This Nancy Meyers classic finds an irresistible rom-com pairing in Nicholson and Keaton, and despite the cringy goofiness of the plot and dialogue, it's hard to resist its good-natured charm. Entertainment Weekly's review declared that every moment spent in the company of Keaton is such a joy that the whole is more delightful than the sum of the formulaic ingredients. Keaton makes Nicholson bounce the way Shirley MacLaine once did in terms of endearment. Number 5 is Ingrid Goes West from 2017. This is available on August 2nd. After the social media-obsessed Ingrid Thorburn, played by Aubrey Plaza, experiences a series of personal setbacks, including the death of her mother, she decides to strike out and make it big in Los Angeles. But Ingrid's definition of success is stalking and befriending her Instagram fixation, the influencer Taylor Sloan, played by Elizabeth Olsen. As Ingrid infiltrates Taylor's inner circle and sees her own social media status rise, it becomes harder for both women to maintain their carefully manicured images. Ingrid Goes West is a blistering social media satire from director and co-writer Matt Spicer, who also directed the Netflix original Little Brother. At the time of its release, Entertainment Weekly's critic called the film a shiny pop satire with a humming undercurrent of existential dread, and a clever, corrosive little trick of a movie, a neon candy heart dipped in asbestos. Number 6 is The Last House from 2026, and it's available to stream on August 7th. A family of 4 suddenly finds itself trapped inside its own home with no way out in this sci-fi thriller from Now You See Me director Louis Leterrier. Together, the family members struggle to survive amid dwindling resources and the mysterious threat keeping them imprisoned. The Last House stars Brazilian actor Wagner Moura, who received an Academy Award nomination earlier this year for his performance in The Secret Agent from 2025. He stars alongside Greta Lee, who broke out in 2023's Past Lives and recently lent her voice to this year's Toy Story 5. Number 7 is The Ribbon Hero from 2026. That's available to stream on August 8th. The Japanese anime film The Ribbon Hero comes from veteran animator Yuki Igarashi in this feature directorial debut. Based on Osamu Tezuka's 1953 manga Princess Knight, the film centers on Sapphire, who loses her kingdom of Silverland to a catastrophe. After settling into a new home, she strives to protect it from the same threat that claimed her former home. A Child of My Own is from 2026. That's available to stream on August 13th. This ambitious true crime documentary blends fiction and fact to dramatize a real incident that generated a tabloid media frenzy in Mexico during the 2000s. When young Alejandra, played by Ana Celeste, endures multiple miscarriages and mounting pressure to have a child, she fakes a pregnancy, but the lie quickly spirals out of control. A Child of My Own comes from Chilean director Maite Alberdi, who previously received an Oscar nomination for her 2020 film, The Mole Agent. Number 9 is The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo from 2011. That's available to stream August 15th. The best feel-bad Christmas movie of all time is David Fincher's adaptation of Stieg Larsson's best-selling novel, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. It follows disgraced journalist Michael Blomqvist, played by Daniel Craig, who is hired by retired CEO Henrik Wenger, played by Christopher Plummer, to solve a decades-old family murder in exchange for crucial info about the man who ruined Blomqvist's career. Blomqvist eventually teams up with troubled hacker Lisbeth Salander, played by Rooney Mara, to solve the case, but the more they uncover about the mysterious death of Harriet Wenger, the more dangerous their investigation becomes. Although Fincher's adaptation failed to meet box office expectations and plans for a trilogy never came to fruition, he said during a masterclass conversation at the 2023 Tribeca Film Festival that he remained proud of the film. "We wanted it to be true to its essence," he explained. "You shoot in Sweden. You're shooting for 8 or 9 hour days, if you're lucky, and so the movie took 140 days to shoot. I was proud of it. I thought we did what we set out to do." Number 10 is Armageddon Time from 2022. That's available to stream on August 17th. This coming-of-age period drama was inspired by director James Gray's childhood experiences growing up in a Jewish-American family in Queens, New York City, during the 1980s. When young Paul Graff, played by Banks Rapeda, befriends a black classmate named Johnny Davis, played by Jalen Webb, he finds himself struggling with his parents' expectations, his Jewish identity, and the stark differences between his upbringing and Johnny's life amid a prejudiced culture. Armageddon Time's excellent cast also includes Anne Hathaway, Jeremy Strong, and Anthony Hopkins. An earnest, unabashedly personal, and uniquely tragic film, it was described by Entertainment Weekly's critic as a nuanced exploration of situational ethics tinged with guilt and a small, near-perfect New York story. And number 11 of our list of 11 is The Whisper Man from 2026. That's available to stream on August 28th. It seems like Adam Scott has found himself a nice little niche playing writers in horror movies, and thus he follows this year's Hokum with The Whisper Man. In the film, based on the best-selling 210 novel by Alex North, Scott plays a crime writer searching for his kidnapped son. He teams up with his father, played by Robert De Niro, a retired detective, and they discover that the kidnapping is connected to an old serial killer called the Whisper Man. Alongside Scott and De Niro, the cast of the Whisper Man includes Michelle Monaghan from The White Lotus, Hamish Linklater from Midnight Mass, and Owen Teague from Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. It will be directed by New Zealander James Ashcroft, who made an impression on horror fans with his 2021 debut, Coming Home in the Dark. That is a list of 11 can't-miss movies coming to Netflix in August 2026, and it was by Brianna Ziegler. And my last article for this episode is 9 Actors Who Gave Up Big Paydays and Why. This is by Britt Hayes. We often hear about actors who make millions, or even tens of millions, for a single movie role. It's much rarer to hear about an in-demand performer willingly taking a pay cut. Such was the case for TV veteran Tom Selleck, who recently reflected on how the stars of Blue Bloods took a sizable pay cut to help secure season 14. That season, however, ended up being the show's last, though the franchise lives on through the Donnie Wahlberg-led spinoff Boston Blue. There are plenty of reasons why an actor might agree to take less money, from helping their co-stars get raises and reducing production costs, to ensuring that the crew gets fed. Here are 9 celebrities who took major pay cuts and some pretty good reasons for doing so. The first on the list is Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz. Classic TV enthusiasts are well acquainted with the impact Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz had on the medium. The couple co-founded Desilu Productions to make I Love Lucy, and Ball later became the first woman to run a major Hollywood studio. Under her leadership, Desilu helped bring such enduring series as Star Trek and Mission Impossible to television. In 1951, Ball and Arnaz helped reinvent the TV comedy with their groundbreaking sitcom, but CBS and network sponsor Philip Morris, it was a very different time, took some convincing. The couple first wrote a $5,000 check to finance the production of the pilot. When the series moved forward, they insisted on remaining in Los Angeles and shooting it on film rather than broadcasting it live from New York, as was common at the time. They also agreed to reduce their combined weekly salary to cover additional filming costs. As part of the agreement, Desilu retained the rights to each episode after it aired, cementing their status as two of the savviest and most successful figures in showbiz history. Stellan Skarsgård is next on the list. After filming the 1997 thriller Insomnia in Norway, Stellan Skarsgård made a vow. I gathered the whole crew and said, I'll never film in this country again unless we get a good lunch, the actor recalled during a roundtable interview at the Karlovy Vary Film Festival via Variety. Skarsgård said he lost 8 kilos, about 17 pounds, while shooting the thriller, which was later remade by Christopher Nolan. We would usually get a loaf of bread that's pre-sliced and a plastic salami. That's it, he explained. I've made other films in Norway since then, But it has always said in my contract that everybody should get lunches of the highest European standard. And that's expensive. Norway, they're the richest country, but they don't want to spend money on food. This is how Skarsgård wound up taking a pay cut to star in Joachim Trier's acclaimed 2025 drama Sentimental Value, which was filmed primarily in Oslo. And when he says, good lunch, he means it. Skarsgård noted that the food has to be served on real china, no plastic, paper bags or whatever. And you're not standing in line, you sit down and eat. It makes everybody happier and it makes the film much better. I haven't made one bad film in Norway since. Keanu Reeves is number 3 on the list. Keanu Reeves has developed a reputation for being one of the nicest guys in Hollywood, both on and off set, so it may not be surprising to learn that the actor has taken more than one pay cut in the name of cinema. According to a 2001 Wall Street Journal profile, Reeves offered to reduce his own pay by a couple of million dollars on 1997's The Devil's Advocate so that the production could afford to hire Al Pacino. He did the same thing when he starred in the 2000 sports movie The Replacements. When Warner Brothers claimed that Gene Hackman's salary was too pricey, Reeves offered to take a pay cut so they could hire the acting legend. Reeves also notably signed over a sizable portion of his back-end deal for the Matrix sequels to members of the special effects and costume design departments. He felt that they were the ones who made the movie and that they should participate, the executive told the Wall Street Journal. Chadwick Boseman is next. The late Chadwick Boseman was another actor who had a reputation for being a total mensch. Following his untimely passing in 2020, his 21 Bridges co-star Sienna Miller emphasized the quality of Boseman's character in an interview with Empire, revealing just how far he went to secure her involvement in the thriller. He produced 21 Bridges and had been really active in trying to get me to do it, Miller explained. He was a fan of my work, which was thrilling because it was reciprocated from me to him tenfold. So he approached me to do it. He offered me this film, and it was at a time when I really didn't want to work anymore. I've been doing non-stop films, and I was exhausted, but then I wanted to work with him. She continued, this was a pretty big budget film, and I know that everybody understands about the pay disparity in Hollywood, but I asked for a number that the studio wouldn't get to. And because I was hesitant to go back to work and my daughter was starting school and it was an inconvenient time, I said, I'll do it if I'm compensated in the right way. And Chadwick ended up donating some of his salary to get me to the number that I had asked for. He said that that was what I deserved to be paid. Kristen Stewart is next. As Miller referenced in the story, women are often fighting to get paid as much as their male counterparts in Hollywood. On the flip side, The Hollywood Reporter revealed that Kristen Stewart agreed to a drastically reduced payday for On the Road, Walter Salas's 2012 adaptation of the Jack Kerouac novel. It took over 50 years for Kerouac's novel to make it to the big screen, and getting it there required some clever financial maneuvering. Stewart, who earned millions for the final two films in the Twilight saga, received only about $200,000 for On the Road. I would have done craft service for On the Road, the actress said in a red carpet interview. I would have done anything. The cast of The Big Bang Theory is number 6. In 2017, ahead of the last two seasons of The Big Bang Theory, the sitcom's main cast members agreed to reduce their per episode rate in an effort to help co-stars Mayim Bialik and Melissa Rauch, who were negotiating for salary parity. According to The Hollywood Reporter, the 5 cast members offered to cut their pay by $100,000 an episode, they'd still be making $900,000 per episode, to try to get Bialik and Rauch higher rates. Although the actresses didn't achieve parity, they were given relatively significant pay bumps, going from $175,000 to $200,000 per episode to approximately $425,000 per episode. George Clooney, he was so passionate about making Good Night and Good Luck that he took a massive pay cut to make it happen. The actor directed, produced, co-wrote, and co-starred in the 2005 drama about broadcast journalist Edward R. Murrow, played by David Strathairn in the film, and his conflict with Senator Joseph McCarthy during the anti-communist Red Scare. "I got a dollar for writing the script," Clooney explained. "I had to endorse my check for directing and turn in my acting salary." Grant, that's Hesloff, his co-producer, co-writer, and co-star, and I each made a buck for doing it. The gamble paid off. Good Night and Good Luck was nominated for 6 Oscars, including Best Picture and Best Director. Christopher Lee is next. Legendary actor Christopher Lee gave one of his best performances in Robin Hardy's 1973 folk horror classic, The Wicker Man. And if you believe Lee, he did it for free. "I got paid nothing. I keep repeating it to people and they don't believe me. It's true," the actor said in the 2001 documentary, The Wicker Man Enigma. Not only did Lee forego a salary, but he also took the film's publicity into his own hands. "I rang all the film critics I knew and I said, will you do me a favor and I will pay for your seat. Will you see this film that's on now?" Nobody asked me to pay for their seats. They went as individuals. They paid for their own. And the acclaim was virtually unanimous. Jack Black is last on our list. Younger readers may not recall a time when Jack Black wasn't a leading man, but it took his breakout performance in 2000's High Fidelity to catapult him to stardom. The actor used his newfound clout to make 2006's Tenacious D in The Pick of Destiny, a movie based on his comedic two-man rock outfit with Kyle Gass. The duo had built a following playing clubs and starred on a cult classic HBO show about their stage personas. Still, making an R-rated movie about Black's pre-mega-fame music project was a tough sell. As Black confirmed to the New York Times, he took a pay cut, reducing his usual $12 million fee to $1 million, which he split down the middle with Gass. "Who cares how much money I make?" Black said when asked about the pay cut. "What's important is we got a movie about the D made, and we got it made the way we wanted." That was our list of 9 actors who gave up big paydays and why, and it was by Britt Hayes. Boy, I'm all out of time. That took us up to the very end, and I do love to read a list. In fact, next week, come back to Entertainment Weekly, and I will have a list of lists, a show of lists. I've got them all queued up and ready to go. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I've been reading from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is ew.com. Thank you all for listening. Until next week, goodbye.